It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear. Here on Declare Your Independence, from me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAU Tough Ball Studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, here at Freedoms Phoenix Farm. And I tell you, you know, this last edition, August edition of the magazine, it was just chock full. It wound up being, I think, 87 pages, and I didn't anticipate it being so large, but we just kept getting a lot of good stuff. They just overlapped. Well, the number one article I said, ooh, this bad boy's going up front, came from Anthony Gregory. Now, Anthony Gregory is a research editor at the Independent Institute, and I got him online. Anthony, I got you there?
Yeah, Ernie, it's great to be here.
Anthony, I gotta ask you. I mean, the first thing I want to know, how many books did you have to read to write that article?
Well... You know, I must say I'm blessed. My girlfriend, Nicole, has been very interested in this topic for a very long time, so a good amount of my background understanding came kind of through the osmosis of being around someone. But I read a fair amount in the couple weeks of research. It wasn't a completely burdensome amount, but I did do my research and I appreciate that
thanks to Nicole Bose for helping and inspiration on this article, and I didn't know that Nicole was your girlfriend. So so you're off the market, is that it? You're telling everybody now? You changed your Facebook status from not single?
I think I believe my Facebook status is silent on the matter, though my Google Plus status I think is more explicit.
You know, let me ask you this. You're starting to, I got an invitation to do Google Plus, and I asked some of the, you know, techno geeky guys, and I said, hey man, should I be doing this Google Plus thing? Oh yeah, it's great, it's wonderful. So I go and I start signing it up, and I had used Picasa, which is the photo organizing, you know, big brother thing of Google, and I put it on my computer, and because I needed to just, you know, organize some stuff. And I went ahead and did that. And, of course, it puts everything into a different drive. I wanted to back it up, dude. And it goes, hey, you do Google Plus, we're taking your entire photo album of the thousands and thousands, everything you got, and it's going to the cloud. And it's ours. And I said, never mind. You know, so I got to, like, do that on a different computer or something. Because, I mean, damn. This is so tell me what you know about Google Plus.
I only know a little bit. I only started using it a few weeks ago. I don't have much there. Most of what I put online, I think that...
You want everybody to know anyway.
I think that there's a great deal about me and everything, and my opinions certainly, that are not secret at all, insofar as the government would be interested in me, they know it all already. I think that privacy, if you want privacy, and you know, bless those who do, and if you want privacy, you can get some of it. But most of what I do, I don't carry on with any presumption of privacy whatever. I assume that if the government or the corporate state is interested in my activities, a huge range of what I do can be known, and certainly anything I'd share on Google Plus, I assume I'm sharing with the NSA and the FBI.
Exactly my point. So yeah, I'm, you know, my thing was, is that it the pictures, I mean, I had thousands of, I mean, all the, you know, people that I just assume not. But, you know, tell me about your experience with Google Plus. How's it different from Facebook?
Well, I must say, putting aside that privacy concern, which for many might be very important, of course, Facebook isn't exactly immune to these problems either.
Oh, it does facial recognition. Sierra puts up some pictures of people, and it just says, bleep, this looks like your friend, whatchacallit, you want us to tag it with their name. I mean, it already knows who they are.
Yeah, it's kind of spooky. But putting that aside, I must say I think Google Plus is very promising. I like the fact that you can designate what circle of acquaintances various people are in, and it's a lot more
selective.
It makes more sense that way. I could put something out that not all of my, you know, not every ex or work related associate or relative will have to bear with the same discourse, and there are different circles of people, just as there are in life, and they overlap. And I think Google has really done a great job on that front in approximating how people's social lives actually are. Whereas Facebook, you know, you post something, and all of a sudden, someone you barely know from junior high is fighting with an uncle, and you know, it's just it can be a mess on Facebook. So I like it. I have a list of my libertarians and libertarian-ish friends on Google Plus, so I don't have to bore people who probably don't want to see everything I write.
Well, you know, I do. You know, one thing that I'll do is I'll go ahead and do it. But the thing that I'm really concerned about is that those photographs, I'd just rather it not. Well, what I wanted to do is before we get too close to the time here, I wanted to talk about the article that you wrote and why it was. And I know that we kind of did the parameters. Now, the next 2 months issues, I mean, if you're interested, I'd love to put something, and you do such a great job. And the one's going to be, we're not sure which month's going to be which, but we're going to do one on Generation Next, you know, like raising the next generation, homeschooling, physical activity, nutrition, education, you know, all kinds of stuff on, you know, having children, you know, which people like my kids are starting to have, having grandkids. I want them to know that there are very great resources out there for curriculum and activities and things. It's just amazing what, so you get them out of the freaking public school. Yeah, you know, not that. Let's, you know, I can give big amen to that one. Not that one. Ain't almost anything else of that. So the other issue is going to be on health and alternative medicines and stuff like that. There's so many advances that it's just the AMA sucks. FDA sucks. So we're going to do on that. So I want to give you a heads up on that. But we said on this one, it's going to be about home growing of food and gardening and livestock and animals. And you took it so wide in covering the issue from not only a libertarian, but the government perspective on how they're trying to corral this in. Give us kind of an overview in a minute here on what your article's about, and then we get detail when we come back from the break.
Well, we have this new phenomenon which has grown in the last few decades, and especially more recently than that, of Americans in the cities, not just in the country, growing little gardens, growing more and more of their food, produce, and in many cases livestock too, for their own consumption and for trading locally. And this is a beautiful thing. I'm a big fan, as you know, of the international market and of people exchanging over wide distances. But I think that with food, local production can make sense too. And the government has long made this difficult with its zoning restrictions. But now even in a status place like Oakland, California, where I live, the zoning fascists have had to back off a bit because so many people are so adamantly interested in preserving this intimate aspect of their lives and keeping it close to home. And so I think that there's something very libertarian about this movement, and we should be aware of it because the future of our health and lives might be at stake.
The future of our health and our lives, our very lives, I agree. And this month's edition of the magazine, an article by Anthony Gregory, will help make that clear to everyone. And we're going to make it clear And the next segment's coming up with Anthony Gregory here on Declare Your Independence in just a little bit.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I see trees of green.
Yeah, lots of green trees. Lots of green trees and green vegetables and green grass and green. Even in the cities. And this is becoming very common, you know, around. I tell you, one of the things that we wanted to do, and it was the other home before we moved up here. We had a smaller, you know, track home that we had in Central Phoenix. Now we've got a little bit of acreage here and we can have some fun. But the there, I wanted to, we were right. If we didn't make the move, we had already talked about on the radio, we were going to put a garden in the front yard with a walk path that went from one end of the yard at the sidewalk and kind of came up a third of the yard and then went out the other end, inviting neighbors to walk through and help me weed and tend my vegetable garden and take a tomato if you help grow it. I mean, you know, this is, and we were really pushing this, going, wow, this is going to be cool, and found that people were doing that very thing. It is a cultural thing. In fact, during World War II's Liberty Gardens or Freedom Gardens or whatever gardens they were doing, because all the food was going to the war and troops and sacrifice and all that, whatever, and they, okay, so we recycled all the tin cans and stuff and did our own gardens. Well, it made a lot of people self-sustaining. They found that that was kind of a problem and issue, too. We need them on the grid. Well, now people are starting to, you know, just for health, I need to grow my own freaking carrots so I can get some non-signed Franken food and nutritionize myself. Okay, do it. Now, the one thing that in your article you wrote, Anthony, is that it said the urban farmers, too, suffer from being pigeonholed as the type you'd find in quasi-socialist hippie communes. Their community's language and cultural habits can be jarring to a free market radical, but they need not be as dissonant as they first sound. When a Randian hears the term sustainable living, another common theme in urban homesteading, he might first think of the central planning nightmare called sustainable development, or other EPA stuff and so on. But we're starting to find out that there's a lot of overlap, and that's what the bad guys don't like. They'd rather, you know, carve you up, pitch you against each other, and offer the referee. What happens when the people are starting to agree on something? Man, that's not in their agenda. So what is it that you're starting to find overlapping from the left, the right, the libertarians and everything on this gardening thing? See where you think there's an overlap.
Well, you know, Leonard Reed said, you know, anything that's peaceful, and certainly not only is urban homesteading peaceful, but there's very little there for any libertarian to oppose. Many libertarians seem to object to people with a lifestyle that isn't nakedly commercial, that doesn't bask in the corporate capitalist system. Now, I defend capitalism, including in some cases corporations, but it's a shame that there's this disconnect that's all based on rhetoric and lifestyle choices. Though I show in the article that not only are these urban homesteads and the sustainable living cooperatives peaceful, some of them are very market-oriented. Some of them engage in commercial activities among each other. They sell each other produce. Of course, farmers markets are wondrous things that have become more and more prevalent all over the country, where local farmers bring their products to market. It's a beautiful sight. I'm sure that you've enjoyed visiting these things. The food is excellent. No one's pointing a gun at anyone. They're a paragon of freedom. And I think that this movement of people who oppose the corporate state and big ag and what the government's done to our farms has a lot in common with us. And in fact, since food...
Hey, Anthony, pull the phone away just a little bit. You're overmodulating just a little bit.
Okay, sorry.
Go ahead.
Food, it's hard to think of anything more intimate to human life, anything more important to culture, anything that we need more just to live. And the government makes a mess of it. It gets worse every year. Food gets more expensive and more distorted. We know about the corn subsidies. We know... I didn't even get much into this in the article, but we know what the government has done by propping up the big corn farmers, which has led to this this great distortion. You go to the store and it's cheaper to buy, you know, processed foods than it is to buy carrots because the corn syrup isn't everything. And this is most of the health problem. You know, I'm not a big fan of demonizing people for what they choose to eat, and I don't think that obesity is an epidemic, certainly not one worthy of government intervention of any sort. But if this is a problem, government has as much role in causing it as anything, and people are taking matters into their own hands. It's a beautiful thing, the fact that people are growing more and more plants, and, you know, whether it's an herb garden all the way up to, you know, having chickens and livestock.
But not raw milk! You know, this is the point that I'm making, you know, I wanted to get to, is that you have a lemonade stand. I have a lemon trees in my backyard. You know, grapefruit, tangia something, and oranges, and I got big lemon trees. It makes a great lemonade. One of our activists, she came over and she said, oh, I got a great recipe. You do this, that's it. Man, that stuff gets sucked down big time. I have my granddaughter, she's getting of age, she's going to go out there and get the big giant lesson in economics doing the lemonade stand. We're going to say, oh, here's your cost and here's your fix, and you're going to rent the picture from me and get yep, boom. No, you're not allowed. You can't. If guys with the guns come out, you're not allowed. And these little farmers markets they have at downtown Phoenix and some of the parks up here, they're starting to get regulated. Here comes some agent wants to get their cut. And they're saying, no, did you get a permit? Did you have, they even have this thing called bountiful baskets that some of the guys use. And you order your food Monday or Tuesday, and you go to a certain park, and you pick up your basket of kind of a pre-selected fresh vegetables, whatever's in season and so on, you get that Saturday. And you got to like 10 o'clock that morning to get it, and then they're gone. And this, all this is starting to get the attention of the man. And I'm going, you know, seriously, I mean, at what point you almost have to have a revolution for everything? What are you seeing? And that you're saying, like, in Oakland, they're starting to, you know, put, you know, be back on their heels going after these guys. But do you got some anecdotes, stories about people that are just trying to make use of their stuff and trade with their friends, and you're so not allowed?
Well, I can't think offhand of any recent events of a crackdown in Oakland. There was a big story from a month ago that even Drudge picked up, where in Michigan there was a woman who just had a small vegetable garden in her front yard, and she faced potential jail time until everyone was so outraged the government backed off. So that kind of thing happens. In Oakland, the zoning is now, it seems like they're now in flux, because at the city meeting, hundreds of people showed up to defend urban farming, and now they're on the defensive. Now they're thinking of revising the code to allow, in some cases, livestock. What you say about lemonade, I think, really just encapsulates how completely this country has lost its way. I mean, if I haven't been around that long, yet when I was, you know, the age of having a lemonade stand, I would have thought everyone would have thought it'd be crazy for the government to tell people they couldn't have a lemonade stand.
It's all part of the psyop, man. Got to get his condition. That which is not forbidden is required. I'm like, wow. We come back. We'll talk about a little bit about the stock market taking another dump and how that'll play into this. Anthony knows. We'll be right back.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
You don't know how lucky you are, boy. Back in the U.S., back in the U.S., back in the USSR.
Yeah, that's one thing they're saying. You know, it looks like in Russia, they're better able to handle the downgrade. Why? Because they already knew better. You know, the government wasn't going to save them, even though they promised it probably more than Mars did. They go, you know what? They're not going to do it. Not going to do it. We're going to grow it ourselves, and were they healthier for it? Except for all that cheap vodka, I guess. So that's one thing I want to ask. Anthony Gregory, he's a research analyst, what title you got here? Research editor at the Independent Institute. That's independent.org. And he's a great contributor to articles that we publish of him. We just rip him off from him anyway. Or, you know, he'll even write something for the magazine. I'll tell you, everything he has to say, Very, very well commented on. I go, you know, Charles, I was talking to Charles Goyette yesterday, and he's like, damn, Anthony is the man. I put Charles as, I think, the second article or down. You're first. He's like, yep, okay, he needed it. He deserved it. It was a good article. So you get a lot of praise, man. Well, one thing I wanted to talk about, in comparison to other countries and cultures that have as part of their livelihood or just part of their culture is growing their own food. In the United States, man, we really got far from that. And it's starting to come back. But you look at places like the Soviet Union or former Soviet Union, did they fare better because of this? Tell me about the history, what you know about that.
Well, in the Soviet Union, private gardens saved them by the collectivized farming and the official farming, especially under the Lysenkoist regime in the from the 20s to 60s, was a huge mess. And shortly after, the Soviet Union began allowing people, kind of looking the other way, as people grew little gardens on their own property, and such as it was, and these little private plots. And by the late Soviet era, something like 90% of the fresh vegetables and a lot of the animal products came from these private farms, these daka or dasha, as they're called. And certainly in modern Russia, this is the case too. Over half of the Russians have little gardens where they grow food, and it is a bigger deal over there, and it has to be. You know, I believe in the division of labor, and in a modern economy with a free market, it's okay not to grow your own stuff. There's nothing wrong with it. But as the government here becomes more and more interventionist, as the economy becomes more volatile under its weight, it might be that people have to turn more inward, and they should still trade, and if they can trade locally or they could trade with their neighbors, that's certainly a good thing. I think that any trade where both parties walk away is probably a good one, right? Well, so that's a great thing.
Well, let me tell you my personal experience on this. We've had probably for almost 2 years, we've had at least 6 chickens. We did it, started the show, and we're like, look, hey, man, we're going to do this chicken thing. Got chickens. And we did this because we wanted to, you know, learn about it, share with it, encourage other people to do it. And it was amazing to me. You can't watch a movie of any or a documentary or anything or go or travel anywhere in other not as developed countries. They don't got chickens running around everywhere. And I'm going, you know, why? Because they can't stop them? Well, I found out why. Because they take care of the bugs. They're not in your way. They fertilize your lawn and they produce eggs. A lot, like one a day. We added some more. We have 19 chickens now, and they just are starting to come into laying age right now, about 5, 6 months old, something like that. And all of a sudden, I got a dozen eggs a day, and I have so many people that are in line to get that dozen eggs so that they can, and they'll trade out whatever. What do you need us to do? We'll come this, that, got this. It's barter. It's currency. It's like the chickens that lay the golden eggs. You know what I mean? So I'm going, I'm hip to that. And then, of course, you start running into other problems. We went up to Washington State, Donna did videos in the magazine, it's in there, of how to milk goats. And I didn't know this. You get about a 1-to-1 ratio of pounds of cheese per gallon of goat milk. And it is fantastic and easy to do. And I'm like, wow, these skills and canning and all this other stuff we put in the magazine are lost arts that our culture used to know. And now we are paying out the butt for stuff that we could do ourselves. If we just had this knowledge, homeschooled our children, mom stayed at home, and we put this kind of real life, we don't die and we eat better knowledge into generation next, we would be so much better off. So I'm asking you, and in your studies and your girlfriend talking to you about this, is there some comparison with our health and with other less developed countries? You know, I wouldn't even say less developed. I mean, they're probably more enlightened, certainly closer to the soil. And I'm wondering, is our health directly related to this industrialization of corn? I mean, you know, give me some kind of what we should be looking for in the future.
Well, you know, I'm not an expert. I've read a lot and heard a lot of people conjecture about this, and I can only tell you what I believe. And what I believe is, yeah, modern the modern industrialized agriculture and factory farming and the big ag and corn subsidies are probably bad for our health. The American health problems have gotten worse in the last several decades. Corn syrup isn't everything. It's not, in my opinion, it doesn't taste as good as cane sugar. And why is it more expensive? Only because of the government, because of corn subsidies and sugar tariffs and policies like that. And you know, anyone who hasn't ever had a delicious fresh egg from a healthy chicken is really missing out. Because as I'm sure you know, it's not the same, is it?
Not even close.
I
just want to make this one comment for people to know. When you go to a fresh egg, you know, that's a good egg. It's probably, you know, a better egg than I had before and so on. You don't really notice the difference until you eat another store-bought egg. You go back and you go, whoa, not even in the same category. I just want to put that in there. Go ahead.
Well, yes. You know, we have a good friend who has chickens, and we'll occasionally get those. And, you know, when we go to the farmer's market or even just get the best eggs we can at the – there's a lot of, you know, these hoity-toity shops in Oakland and Berkeley. And, you know, you get what you pay for. The fact is, the fresher the egg, the more, you know, the healthier the chickens, the more natural the process. These things are delicious. I mean, all you need is the egg, and it's a delicious food product. And all these eggs you get by the dozens at the grocery store for way cheaper, but they're just not that good. You have to do all sorts of stuff to them to really make them tasty. But a good egg is a delicious treat, and it's still cheap, you know, even if you buy at the farmer's market. It seems expensive until you realize, well, I'm still spending less than a dollar for a delicious, you know, chunk of protein and fat. And all of this is true of the food. I think that there's something about food where, you know, people worry about fat, and maybe I should worry a bit more myself. But I think if the food really tastes good and it's natural and we're looking at these whole foods, I think in the longer term, it's probably healthier, too. It seems that all of the, you know, the same with the animals. If anyone is interested in the issue of animals being treated humanely, and it's an issue that concerns me somewhat, I can't claim to always abide by my standards, but it seems there's a correlation that the better the animals are treated, the tastier it is. I don't know if you've noticed this. I'm guessing, based on what we've talked about,
I did a test, and I took some of the chickens, and I was nice to them, and I cussed at the other ones, and the nice ones are better. No, I ignore my chickens. That's one thing I like about them is that, you know, they're just, you know, they don't get in my way. You know, all I got to do is if I let them in the yard, I got to, you know, spray the poop off the patio before I have a pool party or something. Other than that, they're just not in my way. And that's my favorite kind of farm animal, not in my way. I got three goats, too. We haven't started milking them yet. We're learning that. You know, when we come back, I want to make sure, you know, we kind of focus on, there's a lot of things to talk about, and I don't want to spoil a lot of what's in his article, but he did mention raw milk, and that's a big issue, and Dr. Paul has introduced legislation to get the man out of your face on that. He had no idea how important this was to a lot of people. When we come back, we're going to find out why. Anthony Gregory from the Independent Institute, anthonygregory.com. We'll be right back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Yeah, we're back here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, IA from the BEA. Beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, here at the farm. The farm, we're doing our best learning this stuff. We did this with the full intention enough of us doing videos and walking it step by step by step for my wife, Donna, to make sure that this information was available to all the people that we love. And a lot of people came and helped. You know, Verda and Gary from Sun City, they have a big part in there, too. They wrote about, they have these plots that they buy. You're really purchasing the improvements on the lot. What it was, when they constructed Sun City West, Del Webb had this big giant lot, and I guess it, you know, it was probably less than 2 acres, but it's just a lot of where they stored their construction equipment, their big graders and tractors and backhoes and all that kind of stuff. So they compacted that soil and gravelled down to nothing. I mean, it was just no, they said, you know what? Here, you can have a garden. So they started working on it and plotting it out and putting hoses in there. They have one hose, has four spigots that come out to four different plots, and that's the only improvements they gave them. And they have created so much food out there that these senior citizens go out there and just educate themselves, entertain themselves, and fellowship with each other. And they have the food banks coming out there and hauling off produce every week by the gazillions. And I'm going, you know, this is cool. We can really produce a lot. Now we have aquaponics, which gardenpool.org, we had a big story that we did on that in this month's magazine. And that was, you know, the McClung's, the young man and his wife, they learned how to close a system in order to have tilapia fish that feeds the plants, that the plants and duckweed filter the water that goes back to the fish, and then to feed the algae that feeds the fish or the chickens that poop into the water. And then they got, you know, it goes a whole big giant circle, solar powered, and boom, they said, we can feed ourselves. Then what? You get us off the grid and we start producing our own energy, the man is done for. They are done for. Don't want to play no more. I'm wondering, looking at it from that perspective, Anthony, you know, we're talking to Anthony Gregory from the Independent Institute. AnthonyGregory.com, and you can go to independent.org and read a lot of his great articles. Does a lot of research. And I want to ask you, just from a, you know, a space view, you pull back and you look at humanity on this planet and the plague of government that we've had, and you just go, in the future, are we going to be better livestock for the central command, or are we going to start taking care of ourselves and we just don't need them anymore? Where's the trend going? What do you think?
Well, in the very long term, Ernie, I'm an optimist. I think that there's hope for the future. I think that if you look at the history of humanity and go back far enough, liberty has not been on the decline. I think in this country, liberty has in many ways been in the decline, though not in all ways, and things can seem very dire, but if you look around the world, much of the world is freer than it's been in the last century. If you look at tyranny as the norm throughout human experience, and liberty being a relatively new discovery, I think it makes things seem a lot more hopeful, but only in the long term. In the short term, although there's always hope, there's always a chance that on the margins we can win this battle or that, and there's always limits to what government can do, and we're going to see them fail at everything they do, and we can at least get joy in knowing they can't control the world the way they'd like to. In the short term, I'm not that optimistic. I don't think that, I don't know if we'll be better livestock in 10, 20, 50 years, but I don't foresee the state, this horrible engine of mass murder and slavery and imprisonment and looting, mass destruction that's plagued humanity for so long. I don't see it on the decline in the near future, but even in the short term, there are reasons to hope. I hate to have a nuanced view, but that's the way I see it.
No, I can see that. That's logical, but I want to ask you, if you're looking at the short term, what are some of the things that give you the most pessimism? You know, I mean, you're looking at this and you're going, man, that's bad. I mean, the surveillance state and the capacity for keeping data on any and everybody, but that's a double-edged sword against the man. We use the information access to go against them as much as they're trying to control us. So I think there's a lot more that those won't leave us alone, that they know that we don't know, and they're going, ha, if they only knew what we knew, then, you know. And I'm going, you know, I don't care. It's real simple. There are those that want to be left alone, those won't leave them alone, and you won't leave me alone, you're a bad guy. And, you know, it all comes from that and the realization of people. That's why I spend so much of my time trying to educate people on how to know who the bad guys are. These are bad guys. Why? Because they won't leave me alone. Yeah, but no, I don't care what your reason is. You don't have some noble cause that, you know, trumps me wanting to be left alone. What is it? Oh, I got a good reason to not leave you alone? I don't give a crap what your reason is. This realization is the kind of thing that happens overnight. You know, it won't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. And when we have things like what's happening in the stock market and so on, you know, they keep kicking this can down the road until they can't anymore. And they wonder why gold goes up when you have Bernanke saying, oh, yeah, we got QE47 coming. Don't worry about it. You know, so I'm going, talk about the economics a little bit. I mean, this has to play into this at some stage. Food becomes a valuable commodity when people want to eat. So I'm going, you know, give me some, you do a lot of research on this stuff. Tell me, what's your perspective on what's happened economically in the country?
Well, I think that, of course, we're living in the midst of a Keynesian crisis that continues. The government has only ballooned since the financial crisis. And unfortunately, outside of, certainly within the mainstream, there's not many voices for sanity. We've got the Tea Parties that have unfortunately been, to a large degree, co-opted by the Republicans. They aren't interested in really looking at entitlement spending in any serious way anyway, and they certainly want to keep the U.S. empire going. So if you're going to have the U.S. empire, if you're going to maintain Medicare and Social Security, if you're going to keep the fundamental, you know, Fed-induced bubble economy going, well, you can't really do much but tweak around the edges. And of course, the left is as enamored of central planning as in many years. They're only turning on Obama now because he supposedly hasn't been active or belligerent enough. He hasn't nationalized enough, hasn't been socialist enough. And meanwhile, liberty is being attacked in 100 other ways. The police state has grown, more people in prison than ever, 100 SWAT team raids a day, people being shot in their homes, people dying in jail. In the short term, it's very dire, I must say. There's still hope even in the short term, but I think the big question is cultural. If American society constitutes a bunch of people who put up with this stuff or even want this stuff, this is what we'll get. So we have to change the culture. That's why everything you do is so important. That's why everyone who's interested in freedom needs to be interested in spreading these ideas as much as bracing themselves for the short-term roller coaster. So people need to protect themselves, take care of themselves, do what they think is right, and be active in their communities, but they also need to think of the long term for future generations. If we want future generations not to endure the kind of tyranny that has characterized modern America, we need to sow the seeds through educational effort and make people understand real economics, real history, and the moral principles of a free society.
Oh, great rhetoric. And you know, one thing I want to bring up, when they were doing all the debt ceiling, blah, 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 puppet show. Puppet show, puppet show. You just tune in every couple of days. Yeah, puppet show. And the one thing that they never said a word about was bringing home foreign policy. You know, closing the bases, stop all the wars. Wasn't even an option. I mean, didn't that glaringly, you know, hit you in the forehead?
No, they're like the Roman Empire in the last, you know, in the last years, they're totally deluded. They think the American century will last forever, but it won't. Thank goodness.
It was an American century. At least we got one century. We got one. You know, and the first one, and the one before that was the inspiration. It was how people can live and prosper in a free society, a society there where the government, you know, fulfills its promise. Or, well, you know, at least they weren't big enough to be taking away your freedom. You know, what happens? You get a big, giant boom in lifestyle. But what happens when you start collectivizing everything? It goes the other way. We'll see you tomorrow here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Tune in Friday, end of the week. We'll get all summed up.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what readers of freedomsphoenix.com get every day. Readers of freedomsphoenix.com are constantly provided the information that detail the real news between the lines of propaganda about government policies and the true relationship we all have with coercive governments. Learn the true condition of our economy, innovations and technological breakthroughs in energy, health, computer science, and space travel. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media, the media that is so last century. Corporate media has evolved into nothing more than distributors of government propaganda, but we now have a fantastic alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com provides constant news updates on the issues that affect our lives in the most important ways. Our liberty and our property are under constant attack, and FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda while encouraging the participation of our readers. Join us at FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com, where the revolution between the ears has already matured. Tour.